Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in this time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. At first, the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. Then the whining schoolboy with a satchel and shining morning face, creeping like snail unwillingly to school. And then the lover, shining like furnace, was a woeful ballad made to his mistress' eyebrow. Then a soldier full of strange oaths and birded like the pards, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice, in fair round belly was a good cap and liant, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances, and so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his useful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank, and his big manly voice turning again towards childish treble, pipes and whistles in his sound. Last scene of all that ends this strange eventful history is second childishness in mere oblivion. Sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, and sans everything. And thus ends one of the most famous quotes of Shakespeare's play, As You Like It. Hello and welcome.
As You Like It. That's it.
As You Like It.
Did we get swindled, PJ? Because did you just read out the best part of the play already? The rest garbage.
So that is the part I like best, and it isn't necessarily a play that I fully liked. I think I just gave you the best part, guys. So is there anything to take away with? That's it, yeah.
And that has been our episode on As You Like It.
So we're finished now, guys. So...
Well, yeah, that's the best part. All the world's a stage and the people merely players. That's the quote that people will know.
Right, yeah.
There is another, I think they use the quote, too much of a good thing. That phrase comes from this play. But other than that, yeah.
Well, it is. It does have a few famous quotes, actually. So the play itself is not maybe the most popular Shakespeare play. But we can say it's got some quotes in it that people don't even realize. That, you know, oh, it's from this play. They might have thought it's from a bigger play. Anyway, As You Like It, that's what we're talking about today. So what do you think about As You Like It, Dean? Did you like it?
Yes, it was done as I like it. I do like it. These plays that are more lighthearted than the histories, they're just, you know, it's always like an exiled duke and some, you know, characters, you know, faffing about with their little family quarrels and things like that. I like these ones, you know, and this one's not as funny as say, the Comedy of Errors was, for example.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have an awful lot of strong humor, but it's a lighthearted one, and that's kind of how I like my Shakespeare.
Yeah, no, it's got a lot of... it's got a lot of interesting themes in it as well going on. It isn't as funny, I agree, as say the Comedy of Errors, that's hilarious, or even Twelfth Night. But yeah, it's a very light story, basically. It's very easygoing. It's again one of those reads that if you need a break from Henry the Seventh's part 1078, then you might just
slip into this
slip
one.
In
yeah,
this one.
These are nice little airy ones you can just slip into, and you know, then they're done. You know, it's...
exactly. Yeah. So, As You Like It. So, what's it about? So,
well, It's a middle play, basically. It's right in the middle of his kind of his oeuvre. So it's done around a time that he was doing these kind of plays, just after Much Ado About Nothing, in and around the same time as Twelfth Night. So that's the kind of vibe that we're
Right,
getting.
yes.
And as I say, as always, there's an exiled duke. His brother Frederick has usurped him, and the first, you know, we do look at the duke's court, and then we also look at this chap Oliver. Oliver is a son of Sir Roland de Bois, and he has two brothers, Jacques, who we don't meet till the very end, and Orlando.
That's right, yeah.
Orlando is essentially kind of the peasant brother. Like, you know, he should have had a better lifestyle, but Oliver just treats him like dirt and makes him work the farm for him, and you know, threatens to kill him and burn down his house and all
And
kinds of things. Like, it's really a harsh
he even
relationship.
admits it to himself at one point. When I was listening, he says, "Oh, I hate my younger brother, but I do not know why." So it's just he just hates the he actually hates his younger brother Orlando.
I have a question, PJ. On a play like this, on a one-off play, not based on real history, with so few characters, why do we have two Olivers and two Jacques? Why was that necessary?
I don't know. I mean, like, but doesn't Shakespeare do the same thing with a few other plays? Like in Midsummer Night's Dream, there is a guy called Robin. You know, we know Robin Puck, Goodfellow, being that mischievous little hobgoblin. But there's also another guy called Robin. I just feel like, right, well, I never saw a Robin in the other Shakespeare plays. Maybe there's one, I don't know. But like, why do you need two Robins? And I see that quite a lot, actually. And you got, yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know exactly what the
And
idea is.
the strangest thing is, this brother, Jacques, he appears, I think, only in the last 50 lines of the play. He could have been left out. He's completely
He
irrelevant. I don't know
is
why we have.
completely relevant. Yeah. I mean, like, to be honest now, like if I may say so, there is a lot of kind of irrelevant stuff happening in this play. We got to admit it. I mean, it's a
There
good
is.
story, but it does feel like it could be even shorter. So that's what I have to say about it. But anyway, Billy.
There's a lot of bits where there's just, you know, sections of nothing, or there's a lot of songs in this where they're just singing songs for like 20 or 30 lines that could easily be cut, you know, 40, 50 lines. It's a lot of not a lot of nothing and a lot of little things that, I mean, does the plot go anywhere? Does it all fit together nicely? I'm not really sure, to be
Yeah, so I
honest, you
mean,
know?
basically, well, it begins well, doesn't it? Because it begins basically Oliver, sorry, excuse me, Orlando has to escape because he doesn't, you know, he fights the wrestler. Frederick has a
The wrestler
wrestler
Charles,
child, and
yeah.
he has to escape because Frederick doesn't like this kind of treatment. Was a bit kind of all right, fair enough. I know Frederick doesn't like him being a Dubois member because that was.
Yes, he congratulates him after the victory in the he beat the wrestling champion at, you know, SummerSlam or something, I don't know. And then, you know, then he found out that he was a Dubois, and you know, for that reason, the fake Duke Frederick, the usurping Duke, decided that no, he doesn't actually like him, and he needs to kind of get himself gone.
And let's add, guys, just so you know, the Duke Frederick usurped Duke Senior, and Duke Senior has got a daughter called Rosalind, and Rosalind was allowed to stay because her cousin Celia, Duke Frederick's daughter, basically cannot be without this woman. But basically, from the beginning on, it's kind of like just all of a sudden, Duke Frederick does not like Rosalind because she's too popular, she's getting too popular, and he prefers Celia to get popular. So he tells Rosalind to get away from, yeah, to get into the forest, you know, go away. So she goes to the Forest of Arden dressed as a man, thinking that perhaps she would, you know, she'd be better off dressed as a man, taking
Names
Celia
herself
with her.
Ganymede, which is a
Yeah.
character from the Greek, a kind of Greek hero who was a, I believe, a kind of servant on Olympus or something along those lines. But
Right,
names
okay.
herself Ganymede, and Celia becomes Iliana or something because she's an alien. She's been kicked out of her own home, but she hasn't been kicked out. She voluntarily exiles herself with Rosalind.
All right, then. Oh, that's an interesting kind of like Aliana as an alienated, right? Okay, I didn't think of that. Yeah, she loves her cousin so much that she decides to exile herself, and they take the court fool with them. There's always a court
Touchstone.
fool or a jester, touchstone. Yeah, but at the same time, Orlando has to leave too because Oliver is about to kill him, actually, right? So it's a bit of a
Yeah.
coincidence, right? It's a bit of a coincidence that they all have to leave at the same time, these people. And it's very clear that Rosalind fell in love with Orlando after having seen him wrestling. But I up to that point, I think it's okay. Like I'm really enjoying that part. I just think at the end it kind of goes a bit far-fetched.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand one of the key plot devices here. So Rosalind leaves. Why does she decide to become a man? For what reason?
Yes, well, I think the idea is though that they're better protected, right?
They've got a man with them. So if it was, you know, well, we need a male escort or something, they've got Touchstone with them. So that
So
doesn't
I
work.
well, she definitely has to hide her identity. I get that because she doesn't want to be killed by Duke
She doesn't want to
Fredericks.
be killed, but the thing is, the idea of going to the Forest of Arden is once they get there, they will encounter her real father, the real Duke. And then even when she meets him, she's still under this fake identity. And I don't understand why. Am I
So
missing
yeah, we'll
something?
get. So guys, so they go to the Forest of Arden, and basically, Forest of Arden is actually also the name of a forest where Shakespeare grew up close to, and so yeah, it's called Forest of Arden. It's set in France, the whole place, by the way, the whole play, and yeah, the Forest of Arden is actually a real forest close to Stratford upon Avon, where Shakespeare grew up. But yeah, so they go to the forest there, and basically the whole play revolves around Orlando being in love with Rosalind, but Rosalind is dressed as a man, basically. And I get the feeling that she remains dressed as a man because she's kind of, I suppose, yeah. But even I'm struggling to come. I'm struggling coming up with an excuse for Shakespeare.
There's no reason.
Well, I suppose to test his love, I suppose I get the feeling also to keep anonymous.
We
But
get
yeah,
the
you're right.
funny part where she's pretending to be a man, but then she's telling Orlando, "I will coach you to win love for Rosalind. So pretend I'm Rosalind, but really I'm Ganymede, but really I am Rosalind." So then he goes to
Yes.
court and woo this man who is really the woman, pretend, but he doesn't know that. And it, you know, I mean, so there is some comedy in it, you know, but
Definitely.
I just don't understand why she goes through all this farce, you know, and he's going around writing poems and singing songs about her Rosalind and how amazing and beautiful she is, and she's quite sharp with him about that. You know, she doesn't seem to think that this really is very romantic. She's almost embarrassed by it, you know.
But now, hold on a second. This is interesting because the theme of cross-dressing, to be honest, like was Twelfth Night, which I think is one of the superior Shakespearean comedies. Now, Twelfth Night has a lot of cross-dressing with several characters going on, and it's written a bit later, about 2 or 3 years later. And I feel that to understand Twelfth Night, you have to maybe read as you like it, because basically Shakespeare is starting with this cross-dressing theme. And you have to remember, guys, that back in Shakespeare's days, women were not allowed to act. So if you've seen Upstart Crow, it's basically just every 2 minutes it's mentioned as a kind of a
I'm
joke.
even watching it now. I'm so thrilled.
Yeah, you got me to watch it, yes. And there's a character in it called Kate who wants to act, and it's just basically she's not allowed to act. But basically, it's true though, guys. So the funny thing about As You Like It is not just that the woman is cross-dressing, because that's what you imagine in your head, but it's actually a man dressed as a woman, dressed as a man again, who's actually a woman. And
Yeah, it's a man as a female character who is masquerading as a man who is then pretending to be the same woman that he already is. I don't know.
And Shakespeare makes fun of this right at the end of the play. So it's not really a giveaway to the story, but there's an epilogue at the end where the woman says, although if she literally says, if I were a woman, which makes it deeply confusing for modern readers, because you actually thought it kind of makes you again think, oh, was she maybe not? Was she maybe not a woman
Yeah, I don't
from the
know what's
beginning?
going on.
But yeah, all right, okay.
And without really spoiling the details of the plot, what do you think about the fact that the play essentially ends with a double Deus ex machina? Like, is that just bad writing or?
Yes, guys, what can we say about the end? You see, unfortunately, so there's a lot of dilemmas in the play. So basically the brothers, they don't like each other, the dukes, they don't like each other, and it just all kind of wraps up very suavely at the end, just like that. You know,
It's
just
too much.
double
Like,
Deus ex machina. If there's perhaps a triple ex Deus ex machina going on there, it's a bit too much, guys. As I'd have to I would have had liked to have a word with Shakespeare and ask him what was going on there. It's a bit too much at the end, but it's still very enjoyable to read, and I do enjoy all the themes. But as a plot, it's very faulty, I would say, as you like it. But it's very enjoyable in other aspects. But it's
We
very
get
faulty as
Rosalind's reveal, we get Hymen, the kind of Greek goddess,
well.
and then of
Of marriage,
course
yeah.
the irrelevant second Jacques appearing, and it's just why are we getting all these, and they just come in with like, here is some great news, like it's all fine and we've done this and we've done
It's
this, and it's like, well, this is very strange, like all in the last page of the play, like just everything gets wrapped up too nicely, you know.
there are at least 3 Deus ex machina and
It's
going on right at
insane.
the end. But anyway, but what I'd like to talk about, though, I think is interesting nevertheless, the as I mentioned, that it's something that leads to Twelfth Night. First of all, this gender swapping, and I think Rosalind is one of Shakespeare's stronger female characters. I think there's a lot to say about Rosalind. She's very, in a modern sense, she's very, what's the word? She's quite a feminist character, you know, because from the beginning, it's kind of there's a lot of, I suppose, kind of sexual desire that she manifests right from the beginning. It's not like she's masquerading it.
She is the beautiful rose, right? That's her name.
Well, yes, but she's also kind of like sexually attracted to Orlando, and she doesn't hide it. So like the play is not kind of like hiding that too much, and she kind of plays along with him. And there's something very strong about her character, I find, even though you're also asking why is she dressed as a man. But the whole point is she's dressed as a man, so it's getting, so there's a new aspect of her coming out. I suppose her yang side is coming out. And the same thing is happening as Twelfth Night. So I find it interesting, cross-dressing in Shakespeare brings out different aspects of these women characters. They become stronger characters, I suppose, more complex. So I think it's got some interesting characters.
Just to quickly touch on some of the other characters then, because I mentioned there's two Olivers. The second one is irrelevant. He's a vicar who turns up in one scene only. But we should maybe mention the other Jacques, because we've mentioned the irrelevant brother. The other Jacques is one of the lords attending the exiled Duke. You've got Amiens and Jacques, and you know he gets a bit more involved with the story.
Definitely.
And then we have two servants to Oliver, Adam and Dennis, but I actually We find out that Dennis is really more interested in helping Orlando than Oliver, and he helps him throughout.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically Adam is an interesting character because he's a faithful servant to Orlando, even though he's technically Oliver's servant. He's a friend. And I do like this aspect of they're both escaped together to the Forest of Arden. And Adam is this kind of, I suppose, this kind of paternal figure, but I like this friendship that they have,
Sorry,
this
yes,
unusual
Adam. I
friendship.
confused them. Yeah, it's Adam rather than Dennis, who's the
Yeah,
faithful
rather
servant.
than Dennis.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. But he, yeah, I think that's a great kind of character. Shakespeare often has a very faithful male friend who supports the main male protagonist, such as Mercutio, for example, with Romeo. So you always have like a faithful servant or a faithful friend or even a faithful prince, for example. So yeah, Adam is quite strong. I think Jacques is an interesting character. Not his brother, not Orlando's brother, but the other Jack, who's a kind of a depressed, a pessimistic lord under the exiled Duke Senior's court. Yeah, what do you think of Jacques?
I like Jacques. I think he gives the play, you know, he's a nice it's funny because there is a character called Touchstone, but I think that Jacques's a nice touchstone, a nice grounding in reality kind of character. I like
Interesting. Okay.
him.
Well, yeah. So, guys, Jacques, he all the good quotes from this play, the one I did at the beginning, comes from
Comes from
Jacques. So
Jacques.
he's the ultimate pessimist, melancholic, depressed, sort of philosopher. And he's a bit unusual for a Shakespeare fan because you don't usually see someone who's just completely so pessimist.
But I think he
And
helps the narrative along at times. You know, I
he
think
does.
he's important in the play.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I mean, he and so if Jacques I always find that if Jack represents the pessimistic side of life, Touchstone, actually the court fool, he represents the optimistic side of life. So basically they're kind of interplaying along. So you've got these two polar ends of pessimism and optimism, and then the story just revolving around these two poles that are Touchstone and Jacques. But basically Jacques in some sense is also a fool, just as much as Touchstone is a philosopher. So the roles keep getting mixed, I find. Even though technically Touchstone is the fool, Jacques is the philosopher, but sometimes you get confused. And I love that about Shakespeare, actually, right? He always has a fool in it, and or a gesture that always brings out a lot of philosophical aspects, a lot of themes that just the other people in the character would not even dare to mention. And I love that about Jacques, does something similar as well, talking about death, talking about time passing. So yeah, they both complement each other well.
There's some little side plots, as always. I mean, we've got a shepherdess Phoebe, and we've got a girl Audrey, and there's a shepherd Silvis who loves Phoebe, and then I think Corin ends up marrying Audrey, but there's another chap William who likes her, and again, he's totally irrelevant. He does nothing in the play. It's a lot of little side plots and irrelevant people coming and going, and nothing really happens, or they don't really achieve anything, you know, it is an unusual one.
Well, it's a pastoral comedy, and I find similar to Midsummer Night's Dream, it's making fun out of Romeo and Juliet, out of starstruck lovers. It's making fun out of love once again, and Shakespeare does that quite a bit, I find. And yeah, so they might seem irrelevant, but just as in Midsummer Night's Dream, where some things seem irrelevant, I find that they're kind of like philosophical discourses. Both of them are set in forests. And what I find interesting is that a lot of Shakespeare plays are set in forests, actually. But whenever these characters enter a forest, you do get a dreamlike quality. So I find that there's always like two realities. One is the daylight reality of like court, of like palace, city, town. But as soon as people start entering a natural sort of environment, landscape, like for example, the Tempest, like the whole setting of the Tempest is very dreamlike. Midsummer Night's Dream, half of it is dreamlike. Not the beginning, for example, where they're still in Athens. That's not very dreamlike. And just the same here, As You Like It does become very surreal and absurd, actually, as soon as they enter Forest of Arden, and even the plot starts losing it. To be honest, they even start losing the plot. They become
There's
all.
a nice little dialogue that I really like between Orlando and Rosalind, and that dialogue gives us two funny kind of quotes, or two interesting quotes. The first one is, "Now tell me how long you would have her after you possessed her," and he says, "Forever and a day," which is kind of where we get that phrase from.
All
And
right,
she says,
forever.
"Well, say a day without the ever," because you know she's playing hard to get for a long time here. But then it wraps up. It wraps up with her saying this, which I think is hilarious. "That woman that cannot make her fault her husband's occasion, let her never nurse her child herself, for she will breed it like a fool." So she's just like any woman should possess the ability of making all her own faults really her seem like her husband's faults,
Right, okay,
which I
yeah.
like.
No, it does have some great quotes. So guys, if you feel like something lighthearted, but just be aware that it's quite it's an illogical play plot wise.
It
It's
is,
got a lot
yeah.
of our great themes, yeah.
But there you go. That's As You Like It.
As You
PJ,
Like It.
what's our next play?
Our next play is,
Go for it.
Romeo and Juliet.
Juliet. Romeo and
The one and
Julian,
only.
right? It's a play, upstart crew
Oh,
would have us believe it's a play of about gay lovers, but no. Romeo and
exactly. Yeah.
Juliet, yeah.
So that's the one we're talking next. Got a lot of
So
things going
that's
on
one of the
there.
big ones, you know. We're gonna tackle one of the big ones up next. Guys, don't forget booksboys.com. You can find links to our other projects, to all the different episodes, different places that you can hear the different episodes, and of course you can email booksboys@hotmail.com just to let us know how you're enjoying the content. That is us for As You Like It.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.